I find it's difficult in Bloomington to seriously appreciate how others live. We live in a rather homogeneous community. And I think in many ways it serves to bias us. And therefore, we have to, what, try harder, or we are experienced, perceived as out of touch with the broader-based realities. In Jesus' world, unlike Bloomington, that is extremely child-centered and focused, in Jesus' world, children were legally less than human, and at best were considered property along with women and cattle and other animals. Patriarchy, it ruled in first century Palestine and in all other Roman provinces. Now, we know male domination to be a problem today, and we can at least speak about it in polite company and work to, what, root it out in the dark places where it exists. Not so easily in Jesus' day. Now, we were, most of us, I assume, horribly reminded of the ugly reality of male versus female domestic violence being still very much alive in 2018. With the double homicide and then suicide by the killer this week, I don't know if it was in Owen County or in Greene County, doesn't make that much difference. The couple had been married for 54 years, and she said the abuse began after the first month of marriage. And that's a typical pattern. This woman was abused for over a half century, then filed for a divorce. She moved out with her caregiver. She had an order of protection against her husband, and orders of protection do not stand well against men committed to violence, along with a lack of common sense gun laws, and he killed his estranged wife and her caregiver, and then himself. The funeral I read in the paper, I think, is going to be Tuesday, and they are doing that funeral, husband and wife together, and I'm very glad not to be doing that funeral. And of course, one other major story of interest this week and next surrounds the alleged sexual assault of Christine Blasey Ford by Supreme Court nominee Judge Kavanaugh. The problem with confirming Kavanaugh, even if he did it, on the premise that men shouldn't have their lives and careers ruined by the actions of their youth, is that if he did it, he has clearly shown no remorse, no recognition of the harm that he caused, nor any understanding of the restorative justice that is required before forgiveness is possible. Restorative justice is the principle that injustices need to be remedied. When people are victims of injustice, their experience can rarely be undone. Such crimes often include violations of a person's body, mind, and soul. The body's memory of rape and sexual assault can never be undone. Just as degrading and demeaning verbal abuse cannot be unheard. The fear and the terror associated with these crimes or with a mugging or physical attack cannot be erased or forgotten. Now, everybody here knows our culture routinely accepts sexual violence against women as kind of normative, or at the very least, as a woman's fault for putting herself in a vulnerable situation. In such a culture, it would not be particularly surprising that the boy who grew up to become Judge Kavanaugh didn't even remember the encounter. Violent, terrifying, and abusive encounters with boys and men mark the histories and the psyches of countless women across this country and across the world. The normalization of this violence and the refusal to hold we men accountable for violent, sexually aggressive behavior is a symptom of a culture that cares more for protecting male privilege, patriarchy, than defending women's human rights. A rush to vote in the face of credible accusations of sexual assault will probably serve to just further compromise the moral authority of the Supreme Court. It offers the appearance of disregarding the seriousness of sexual assault and sexual violence. And a young man who disregards the human rights and bodily integrity of girls and women can easily grow into a man who disregards the human rights and bodily integrity of women. As the Supreme Court is poised to rule on essential matters related to women's bodily integrity, we need members of the court who champion the human rights of all people in this country. And we need a Senate that recognizes the severity of violence against women. I sort of wish that Jesus had used a woman in his lesson this morning rather than a child. But he didn't. And it was scandalous enough that he equated loving, caring for, going out of your way for a randomly chosen kid as being equal to caring for God. This is said in the context of that primary group of Jesus guys, his close disciples, arguing amongst themselves who will be greatest in Jesus' new order of reality, the so-called kingdom or kingdom of God. They knew in their heart of hearts, these disciples, these guys, that Jesus loved them and that they had hitched their wagon to a man who was going places. They were walking and talking about their place in the group of 12 privileged men. It's safe to say that they had missed a key aspect of Jesus' understanding of what it ends up meaning to be a person of faith. And we find this, or at least I found it, reflective in that song from Jesus Christ Superstar, where the apostles sing, "Always hoped that I would be an apostle, knew that I'd make it if I tried. Then when we retire, we can write the Gospels, so they'll all talk about us when we die." And then Jesus wakens them to the stunning realities of what it means to be a person of faith. That the first shall be last and the last shall be first. And that unless you fully welcome in the least of these children, you are not welcoming the presence of God. This reflects that passage in Matthew where Jesus says that when we encounter those most in need, it is then that we come face to face, soul to soul with God. We can pray, we can travel to the holiest places in the world, and yet if we really want to encounter the living God, Jesus says it's as close as the children in our own town, many of whom have the greatest of needs. We, collectively, we as a nation, have now imprisoned what? Over 12,000 immigrant children? We've imprisoned 12,000 children, many completely separated from their families with no hope of ever being reunited. We certainly are not a compassionate nation, a nation of faith, or we would not even consider doing something so horrendous, and yet we're doing it. We're sitting comfortably in our homes, in our church pews, and we must answer to God for what we are allowing to occur. I think it remains meaningful to say that if you are not outraged by this, then you're not paying attention. Just here at First United, we struggle. We struggle to find teachers of our own kids in children's learning time. Then 4 days a week, we have classrooms here filled with nearly 60 children from economic at-risk families in our Head Start school program. They need volunteers. Each classroom has needs that will simply boggle your mind. And what they need are sincere, caring adults who will volunteer to do a little one-on-one so that their educational experience is truly a head start into life. In addition, Head Start is required to match their funding by finding volunteers and donations. It has to equal out for them. If you have an hour or two on a weekly basis to give to some of the happiest faces in the world, please talk to me about volunteering at Head Start. Kim, you can talk to her too. We are living in one of the most interesting and challenging times in human history. And all things being said, as they are, Indiana, though hotter, will continue to become one of the most prime pieces of real estate in our country due to climate change conditions in which models suggest that we will have heat, but also plenty of rain. Go figure. Who would have guessed that Indiana, home to such fundamental conservatism and leadership in denying climate change, would find itself, in spite of itself, a place that will probably be favored by climate change realities in comparison to so many other places in our country. If I'm even modestly honest, I have to admit that I want punitive justice. I want divine retribution for those who have blatantly denied climate change realities. And what do I get? We Hoosiers have nurtured into power one of the most theologically insane and anti-science conservatives into being a heartbeat away from President of the United States. It reminds me that life is simply not fair, and in fact can be cruelly unjust. We are already seeing the calamitous impact of climate change on the poor and those most at risk, children and the elderly. Around the globe, the people who can, well, they get out of the way of the increasingly huge and dangerous storms. Those that can are building safety into their environment. Those who can't afford to even leave the danger zones are dying. I don't want this reality to be true, but in so many places around our globe, human beings will increasingly become so desperate just to move to higher ground, safer places, that whole populations will rise up and seek to demand their rights to survive over and against those who can afford safety and who are claiming, well, it's not their fault that you poor people live in those flood-prone areas. Millions of our world citizens are going to be seeking to move in the next several decades, and there will be major conflicts and challenges to established status quo arrangements. It's a crucial time in human history, our particular history, to have faith that is deeply grounded in the essence of God. Faith will not save us from the destructions that are going to happen as our global climate continues to change. But faith will give us the courage to discern where God's priorities need to be brought to personal and collective actions. I think children teach us to risk hard questions on our way to God. Kids aren't afraid to ask awkward, challenging, even impossible questions. They are naturally curious. They're not embarrassed by their ignorance. They're willing to risk social discomfort just to get to the truth. If they don't understand something, they ask, and they persist in asking. My granddaughter is in that 3 to 4 age group, and she asks something like, on an average, of 350 questions a day. In contrast, the disciples in this week's gospel story, they miss an opportunity to draw closer to Jesus because they're too afraid to ask the hard questions. In telling them candidly about the suffering that lies in his future, Jesus offers his disciples the possibility of a deeper, more vulnerable making intimacy with him, with God, if you will. But they just refuse the invitation, either because they don't have the courage to admit their ignorance or because they can't bear to hear truths that cause us pain. Perhaps they believe, as we so often do, that avoiding the uncomfortable stuff will save us. Whatever the case, their unwillingness to ask tough questions of themselves, of each other, of Jesus, limits their growth, their fellowship with God, and their ability to honestly serve the people in need in their world. I think children teach us to trust God's abundance. Young children generally expect that there's enough to go around. Enough time, enough hugs, enough attention, enough love, enough Teddy Grahams, enough cheddar-flavored goldfish, you name it, it's enough. It doesn't occur to them to fear scarcity unless they're conditioned to do so. Left to themselves, I think kids assume plenitude. And in her memoir, The Cloister Walk, Kathleen Norris, if you've not read it, it's a great book. She tells a beautiful story about St. Teresa. And when Teresa was 4 years old, she was shown a handful of colorful ribbons, and she was asked, choose one. And in trance, she simply responded, I choose them all. The disciples in this week's story don't believe that all is available in the kingdom of God. They don't lean into God's generosity, sufficiency, and abundance, believing that what's available to them is meager and inadequate to start with. They quarrel for who's in first place, first dibs, first prize. And in response, Jesus points them to a non-striving, unambitious, open-hearted trust of a young child. And as it says, as if to say, I think, guys, you need to stop racing. You need to stop competing. You need to stop scrambling. There is enough. Enough. Now, what are we going to do that matters? And finally, children teach us, I think, what divine power really looks like. This is, I think, a radical lesson. A young child is the very picture of helpless, dependence, of powerlessness, of need. In some cultures, children are socially invisible. In others, they're legally unprotected. In all cultures, children are at the mercy of those of us who are bigger, older, stronger than they are. And this shocking portrayal of dependence and vulnerability is the portrait that Jesus offers of God. In the divine economy, power and prestige accrue as we consent to be little, to be vulnerable, to be invisible, to be low. We gain greatness not by muscling others out of the way, but by serving them, empathizing with them, sacrificing ourselves for others' well-being. Whatever human hierarchies and rankings we cling to, Jesus upends as he holds a tiny child in his arms. Do we want to see God? Do we really want to see God? Then we have to look to the child abandoned because they're gay or trans. We need to look at the child in detention at the U.S. borders. We need to look at that child that a clergy is molesting. We need to look to the child dying of gunshot wounds in their kindergarten classroom. We need to look to the child that a parent is trafficking. We need to look to the child who can't access health care and education or even dinner. We need to look to the child who is drowning in their anxiety and their depression. We need to look to the weak, the small, the simple, the vulnerable, the helpless. Look to the ones who are not in charge. Look at the tiniest faces, and you will see God. One of the most central and amazing truths about our faith is that Jesus was a helpless human child. Sweet little baby Jesus. Jesus, in this week's gospel story, underscores the stunning truth that all children everywhere represent God's heart, God's likeness, God's power. To welcome a child is to welcome the God. To cultivate childlikeness is to cultivate godliness. To consent to be little is to become great. You want faith? Want milk? Care for the children in very real ways, and you will know God intimately.